You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast, sometimes more than daily. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. Now, we've just heard from the Prime Minister a little bit later than we expected on the national lockdown measures he plans to bring in. In sending his message, he went back to some old phrases that we haven't heard for a while, but we used to hear very frequently. Here's what he had to say.
We will get through this, but we must act now to contain this autumn surge. We're not going back to the full-scale lockdown of March and April. The measures that I've outlined are less prohibitive and less restrictive, but I'm afraid from Thursday the basic message is the same. Stay at home, protect the NHS and save lives.
James, that's the Prime Minister suggesting that we should stay at home, protect the NHS and save lives. So are we back to where we were pretty much exactly in terms of the first lockdown?
Yeah, obviously the big difference is that schools will remain open this time in a way that they didn't in March. But I thought the Prime Minister using that language was a reminder of how much more difficult politically this second lockdown will be even the first one. The first lockdown, that there was kind of near unanimous consensus that it was the right thing to do. I think everyone accepted that in the face of a virus about which so little was known, you know, you had to buy time, you had to act in that way. I think this is much harder. Now, you can say that Boris Johnson isn't the first leader who set himself against the national lockdown to have to turn around and end up implementing one. You know, you've had the Irish government and Emmanuel Macron have to make the same journey. But I think the difficulty for Boris Johnson is that he announced this regional approach only just over 2 weeks ago. He rejected Sage's advice for a 2-week nationwide circuit breaker back in September. He rejected it again with even more force when Keir Starmer backed it a few weeks back. And I think that is why this is so politically difficult for Boris Johnson. Adding to that is that the way this news has come out has added to the consternation of the outer cabinet and his MPs. He is having, I think this is one of the most difficult political weekends he has faced in his premiership so far.
Fraser, listening to Boris Johnson today, did you feel as though he was putting in a solid performance? Did you feel as though he was managing to suggest national unity at this moment? Or was it tricky for him?
Well, we all know it's been tricky. We have seen all sorts of political mayhem and collapse, briefing and counter-briefing, leaking coming from what was supposed to be very secure parts of the government in the last 48 hours. And so he did a pretty good job of seeming to be across it. But listening to him, it was clear how much his view has changed of the virus. He basically said the NHS is on course to be overwhelmed, tsunami style, if it were not for a new lockdown. He didn't think that 2 weeks ago, he didn't that 3 weeks ago. And he went straight into these graphs explaining why. Now, the graphs showed that the leaked Sage scenario that we did in the magazine a few days ago is as nothing compared to what he's got now. Our scenario had, the leaked Sage scenario from the end of July, had deaths peaking at 800 a day. Tonight we were showing graphs showing a death peaking at 4,000, even 6,000 a day. And most importantly, peaking at the end of December, beginning of January. Now, if that's the timescale they envisage, we can forget about, I think, this lockdown ending in December. I think this could last for quite some time more. What we didn't hear, of course, was why his assumption has changed so much. Internally, the government's view of COVID has gone through a complete transformation, a kind of COVID metamorphosis, as it were, from thinking this was something we could handle to thinking this is something which is going to crush the NHS. Now, only a couple of months ago, the NHS was saying to the government, look, let's expand, let's build the SeqCall centres to deal with COVID patients. And the message came back, no, you won't need to do that. The second wave isn't going to take that form. It's going to be dealt with in test and trace. So for me, watching the presentation raised a lot more questions than it answered. The main question being, what has changed so fundamentally about the government's understanding of the nature of the beasts that we're dealing with?
James, do you think the graphs, and there were some complaints about the graphs, that they weren't exactly the clearest graphs we've ever seen, presented by Patrick Vallance and Chris Whitty, would have done enough to really give both the public, but also Tory MPs who are quite sceptical, a sense of why this allegedly four-week lockdown is needed. They talked about how the second wave was on track, if nothing was done, to be a lot worse than the first. So do you think there's enough evidence there, or do you think people will not take that?
I think the reason that Downing Street went with so many slides is to try and kind of to show people the evidence. I mean, you know, I think that Boris Johnson's kind of approach is, look, I don't want to lock down any more than you do, but look at the data that I'm looking at. I think it didn't entirely come across to a prime time Saturday night TV audience, and they were
pre-strictly warm up.
I mean, we are lucky in that we get sent them as PDFs that we can look at on our computers or our phones. And I mean, that's much easier to understand the charts than on a TV screen, where the key, which is, you know, obviously vital to understand the charts, was being cut off on BBC One. So I'm not sure how much the data and the charts would have added to the viewer at home's understanding, because they're just hard to understand in that format. But I think that was the message they were trying to get across, is that this is driven by the data. I think that the challenge is, as Fraser said, which is because both Sage and Keir Starmer had previously backed locking down earlier, you run into the inevitable question of, well, why didn't you do this before? And I think that is what is so difficult for Boris Johnson. His attack on Keir Starmer so far throughout this crisis has been that, you know, he's a Captain Hindsight. That dog's not going to hunt anymore.
Fraser, you mentioned earlier the length of this lockdown, or the alleged length. One of the reasons people are so sceptical when they say, oh, it's going to be 4 weeks, is because the last lockdown we had, which was several months, was allegedly supposed to be 3 weeks. But you did get the sense in the language Boris Johnson was using, and also in the questions to Vilance in the Q&A, that they saw this lockdown as different because it was more time specific. So do you think that is the case? Do you think we will see a firm? Because the idea is it will go from being this firm nationwide lockdown to going back to the three-tier system by the end of the 4 weeks.
Yes, I have to say, you do begin to spot a pattern in these. You get this big restriction, you're told it's only temporary, this is very tough, but don't worry, it'll be over soon, and don't worry, the medical cavalry is on the way, we've got this new test coming around the corner. They went through the motions of the usual, the stations of the COVID cross tonight. We heard them all right up to the point about the great revolution in testing. And I'm afraid to say, you can be forgiven for thinking, well, we're just going to get settled down for this for quite some time to come. I don't doubt that Boris Johnson means it when he says it. But what we found out from the last time is that they kept the restrictions going when there was almost no COVID left in London, for example. We were down to something like 70 or 80 cases a day, and still we had huge numbers of COVID restrictions. And that's in a city of 10 million. So going on past performance, there is nothing that would lead you to think that we're going to be out of these woods by Easter next year. And this is what I think is the big difference this time. Not only are they telling us that the virus is potentially going to take, like, it's going to peak at four times the height it did last time. By the way, last time it was spreading without any really evasive action. We found out about the virus at quite a late stage, and we locked down after it had started to fall. So for some reason now, when we're taking all of these precautions, we think it's going to be far more potent. Now, what we had tonight was, as Professor Neil Ferguson was popped up in the broadcast just earlier to say that as soon as you undo the lockdown, then it will simply come back. You don't avoid anything. It's simply waiting for you. So this, the worrying thing, was that a lot of investors, a lot of businesses will look at this and they'll think, look, this is not just a winter lockdown. This is a cycle of lockdowns for the foreseeable future until such times as there is a medical breakthrough. So the problem is the exit strategy. I'm not quite sure many people think that really these are going to be released in December. I don't think anybody thinks things are going to be normal or anywhere near normal by Christmas. And I think the economic damage this time could be a lot worse, because it's one thing hunkering down, furloughing staff, trying to run down your savings as a company if you think it's a one-off hit that you're going to be working again in 4 or 5 weeks. Right now, restaurants and bars will be thinking they can't ever see a return to normal, not in the next 6 months, 12 months, perhaps ever. And that's when a lot of them will decide just to shut up shop, and when unemployment should go up. We gather that the furlough scheme is going to continue at about 80% of its rate for the duration of these measures, so the furlough cliff edge won't be as bad as people think. But the decisions on whether to let go of staff or not, even whether to close businesses or not, are going to be a lot more difficult this time around.
James, Boris Johnson did try and flesh out his exit strategy, but as I think Fraser's touched on, it does base itself on a lot of hope. So he suggested that we should hang on in there because by the spring, and Chris Whitty shares this view, something will turn up. And he said of the three things that could turn up, it could be better treatment, pointing to dexamethasone. I'm not sure if I said that quite correctly. Also pointing to mass rapid testing and saying there's a reasonable chance of a vaccine. Do you think, speaking to Tory MPs, we know a large chunk are very sceptical of this idea of, you know, just perpetual lockdowns, restrictions in the hope of a vaccine. Do you think his words tonight will have suggested to them that it's worth sticking with him, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel?
I think this is the question. There is definitely concern in government and among Tory MPs that the optimism about mass testing is, you know, is Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock's optimism bias in the same way that there was optimism about how quickly the vaccine might come? And I think this is one of the things that makes it so much more difficult than March. You know, in the first lockdown, you know, the people hadn't been disappointed, if you see what I mean, by scientific breakthroughs not turning up on time, if you see what I mean. Well, as this time they have, which is harder. I think, you know, these lateral flow tests, as they're called, you know, if they can be increased and rolled out, you know, that could make a difference. You know, as Jeremy Hunt keeps saying, if you can test the entire population, that would make it much easier, or by definition, obviously, to pick up the asymptomatic cases. I thought one of the things that struck me listening to this press conference was, you know, given how similar what Boris Johnson had to do to what Emmanuel Macron had to do on Wednesday night, I was struck by, in the Macron press conference, there was much more appeal to national solidarity, to the national spirit, than there was from Boris Johnson tonight. I thought it was very striking that Boris Johnson went straight to the data tonight. He kind of basically said, sorry for interrupting your Sasso night, and here is the data that you need to look at. And I think this shows how Number 10 think that this is how they're going to convince people, with it, which is, you know, through the data. I do think they need to have, to try and regain some of that sense of solidarity that you had back in March, you know, when the country really did come together.
Now, Fraser, although Boris Johnson has announced this, it does have to go through Parliament as part of the Brady Amendment. Boris Johnson and his government said that they would give MPs votes on national measures, which this is. What do you think we're going to see there? I mean, I don't think anyone really expects the vote to fail. We know Labour will support it. But do you think we could have a scenario where Boris Johnson has to rely on Labour votes to get his plan through?
I'm afraid to say it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. When I was looking at these studies today, I was just struck by, just first of all, they seem to come out of thin air. All of a sudden, we're told that, you know, that hospital numbers aren't going to peak at 3,000 like the original worst-case scenario thought. We're now looking at 4,000, perhaps as far as 9,000, but we're not told why. I think the risk is that Number 10 never explain. They just come up with scary graphs and they say to Parliament, look, this is the data. And then when they're asked questions, is it really the data or is it just an assumption? Is this a model? How reliable is it? If it isn't able to make that case, then it could struggle. Now, I've got no doubt that we've learned so much about the virus since last time around, but those making these models will have vastly improved their assumptions. But I think lack of transparency might really be Number 10's undoing here. If it's unable to explain much to the country why its view of COVID has so fundamentally changed, it won't be able to explain to the party. And if it can't make its case in a democratic forum like Parliament, then it will, I think, find a lot more rebels seeking to withdraw their support. I don't think there's any question that this will go through. Keir Starmer will vote it through immediately. But I do worry that the basic transparency and clear communication, which ought to be standard in a pandemic, are not being prioritised by Number 10 right now. If we're back into the stage of, here's a terrifying graph, please do as we say, then that's not a very persuasive way. You don't change minds there. You don't assure people that way, either in Parliament or outside Parliament.
And finally, James, if we look at the past 24 hours, Boris Johnson had not planned to give a press conference today. He had to do it when details leaked out. What is the mood in the Tory party in the sense of what's happened? Are they patient? Are they frustrated?
I think in my time working for The Spectator, I've rarely known Tory MPs as angry as they were this morning. I think there was kind of real rage about finding out about it in the way that they did. I think one bit of good news for the Prime Minister is he saw Steve Baker, who's a kind of leading kind of lockdown skeptic among Tory MPs, and he came out of Downing Street and said, look, everyone's got to listen to what the Prime Minister has to say. And he said that he'd appreciated the time to kind of question the scientists involved. But I think there is a lot of unhappiness in Tory MPs circles. And I think, you know, Boris Johnson sent a message to a Tory MPs WhatsApp group tonight, basically saying, look, I'm really sorry you had to find out about this from the newspapers. You know, that wasn't from me. We launched a leak inquiry and all that jazz. But I think he will need to show his party some love because they are deeply uncomfortable with the idea of an England-wide lockdown. Remember, they've been attacking Keir Starmer for proposing that, and they now feel like, oh, God, well, now we're doing it. And I think it will be difficult. And I think in Parliament on Monday, you know, Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance won't be there. He will have to find a way to explain in his own words why he is doing what he is doing. He needs to make a really compelling speech explaining the case for his actions.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And thank you for listening to our third podcast of the day.